So in our Lent liturgy this morning, we have had the money bag, a reminder of the exchange of money and the betrayal of Jesus. But later on in the service, we're going to have a reading from John's Gospel about something, another story that related to money, when Jesus turned over the tables of the money changers in the temple. Now, I'm afraid, because my printer only goes up to A4, that this is a very small visual aid. So, I don't, if anybody at the back wants to come and sit further forward so that you can see it more, it doesn't. There's no detail on it other than you can see some different colours on here. So, this is, could be anything, but today, this is an anger scale, okay? So at the end here, it's all calm and peaceful. You know, you're looking outside, you're seeing it's a lovely sunny day and all is well with the world. And then at this end here, something's happened that has made you really, really cross. And maybe, I don't know, perhaps you're a bit like me, maybe when you get cross, maybe you get a little bit shouty. And maybe sort of go a little bit like this. And it all just doesn't seem very, very fair. And then somewhere in the middle, you know, we're kind of a little bit irritated. Might be something quite minor, but, you know, somebody just beat you to getting the last biscuit on the plate or something like that. So we've got our anger scale. Maybe think about what things make you feel nice and calm and what things make you feel really angry or a little bit in between. And I think sometimes the things that make us angry are things that are, they because we feel something's not fair. But not fair because we didn't get what we wanted, or we thought we deserved something a bit different. But what Jesus shows us in the story we're going to hear later is Jesus put up with an awful lot, perhaps a lot of things that might have made us angry. But when he did get angry, he was getting angry about something that was really important, because it was about injustice. It was about things that were really not fair, not just because we would have really quite liked to have had that last biscuit, but things that were really unfair, where people were being treated badly. And so I think that's our kind of thought for us today, that one of the things we're going to be thinking about later as well, I'm not sure what you're going to be thinking about downstairs, is, but thinking about how we can make a difference and use our anger wisely to make a difference about things that are really important, and perhaps to think about sometimes whether something is really worth getting very angry about, and focus on the things that are. And sometimes we might think that we're too small or too unimportant to make a difference, or that the problem is too big, the injustice is too terrible, that we can't make a difference. But I think probably most, if not all of us, all know about Greta Thunberg, who, even as a very young teenager, was so, you know, so angry about the injustice of the climate crisis, and that people weren't taking notice of it, that she took action. And she started off by taking little actions, and then they ended up being very, very big, and now lots of people have heard of her all over the world. But we don't have to start by, or even end up with, an action that's very, very big. It can start off with something very small. Even if we see somebody who's being bullied or not treated very well, just going up and making them feel welcome, and knowing that they're not on their own. So that's something that relates to what we're going to be thinking about here later on today. So that's.
Now may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts
Be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. So today I want to think a little bit about the setting of our gospel reading, the temple. The temple was constructed to reflect the Jews' cultural pecking order at that time. So in the centre was a small room called the Holy of Holies. And by their thinking, God was in that space. And that was so holy that even the high priest was only allowed to enter it once a year. And then outside that was the courtyard of the priests. And outside that was the courtyard for the male adult Jews. And outside that was the courtyard for Jewish women. And then finally, around the outside was the courtyard for the Gentiles, so those who weren't Jews. And it was in that courtyard that the money changers and the animal traders were found. So you can understand that to a certain extent, because it was the first place that people would go through, even if they were going into one of the other courtyards. And the Gentiles weren't considered to be, you know, as important as the Jews, and so it was kind of okay for their area to be mixed up with the money changers and the animals and the animal traders. And if you think about it, it's not that surprising that they would have money changers at the temple, if you think about what was going on there. So at that time, animal sacrifice was a really important expression of faith, and many of the pilgrims who came to Passover would have travelled a very long way from other countries, and so it would have been impractical for all of them to carry their own animals for sacrifice. So the temple officials had a supply of animals for this purpose. If it's not too much of a heresy to say, it's a little bit like when you go to a theme park or a museum or something, and you're not allowed to take in your own food, and they just happen to have things there that you can purchase. So they had a supply of animals that people could buy, but there was a catch here, because these animals had been chosen for sacrifice, they were considered to be particularly special. And so ordinary non-Jewish money was considered too sordid for the purchase of these animals for religious purposes. And so the pilgrims had to exchange their non-Jewish money for the necessary coins to pay for the sacrifice. So in the Talmud, one of the Jewish sort of law, the standard rate was half a shekel per person. Well, that was the equivalent of about 2 days' wages. So, you know, even if you were on minimum wage, that's still, you know, still not an insignificant amount of money. And even if it was somebody who had the Jewish money, because it was a half shekel, if they didn't have a half shekel, they would have to exchange their shekel for two half shekels. But in order to do this, of course, the money changers had to be, they had to make a profit. They were there doing their business. That was their job. And so there was an exchange rate profit, when you exchanged that money. And over the years, that exchange rate had grown, and there was just a lot more profiteering. And the other way in which there was corruption was that only perfect animals could be sacrificed. And so for those who did bring their own animals, there were special inspectors who, for an appropriate amount, would inspect your animal But over the years, the custom had changed so that virtually no animal from the outside would pass this inspection, and then the pilgrim would be required to buy a temple animal for sacrifice. And unsurprisingly, that turned out to be expensive. So a pair of doves sold at the temple cost the equivalent of 24 days' work. Now, it seems that there's, historically, there doesn't seem to be any doubt that the temple had become excessively wealthy through this sacrifice money and money exchange, and I don't know if there were other things. But some years before Jesus, around 54 BC, when the Roman leader Crassus captured Jerusalem, some contemporary historians said that he took the equivalent of more than £2 million in today's money from the temple without anywhere near exhausting the wealth that was there. So this was quite a big deal. And so you can see why Jesus would be upset at the injustice of this exploitation of the poor in the name of God. But it wasn't just a financial issue, it was also a spiritual injustice too. Because this was in the Gentiles' courtyard, and they were allowed and expected to get as close as they could to the temple to offer their prayer. And so this was the closest place. But here in this courtyard, they would have been having to contend with this, you know, you could just imagine, I guess it would have been a bit like being at a livestock market almost. You'd have the sheep and the calves, and the animals would probably have been frightened and making a noise, and people bargaining, and lots of people there, and so you could just imagine that it wasn't really a very calm environment that would have made it kind of easy to have spent time in prayer and contemplation. And so, again, you know, this may have been another reason why Jesus felt so strongly at what was being done in the name of God. So I think Jesus could see that there was a real injustice here, and that the marginalised groups were most affected. But it was also that it was preventing the temple from really fulfilling its true purpose, allowing people to connect with God. Because even if you then moved into one of the inner courtyards, if you'd just been through that process of all the noise and the upset and the bartering over the how much money you had to pay, and then getting through to wherever your prayer area was, even though that might have been quieter, you probably wouldn't have been in quite the right frame of mind to be connecting with God. And so the selling of the animals and the money changing created a sort of boundary to God's love. It was almost as though you can't get to the next point. You can't really encounter God's love unless you've got through all of this. And that was something that Jesus stood up to and wanted to change. So what does that mean for us today? In the Methodist way of life, which I've spoken about before, and some of you might have looked at some more, you can see more on the on the Methodist Church website, and I know that we've had some cards here before as well about the Methodist way of life. One of the aspects of our discipleship is a commitment to challenge. And in that, it reminds us that God is a liberator, that God takes the side of people experiencing injustice, and that we are called to do the same. And so just some things perhaps to ponder on over the next, you know, maybe over the next week, and perhaps discuss at some point. When you hear that story or read that story of Jesus getting really angry and overturning the tables, how does that make you feel? And does it make you feel differently when you think about why he did it? And what about here at Dorset Gardens? Are there, in the same way as perhaps the Gentiles might have felt a little bit marginalised at the temple, are there people who might find it easier to feel at home here at Dorset Gardens? And are there people who may not find it so easy, however much we might think that we're being welcoming or want to be welcoming? And is there anything that we could do? Doesn't need to be as dramatic as turning over the tables, and it doesn't have to be about something that was such a great injustice. But is there something else that we can do to ensure that that people feel welcome? And in your own life, what have you done recently to make someone feel fully included? And perhaps there's a situation that you know about that over this next week you might be able to take an action that could help to make someone feel included in whatever situation you're in.